Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and wherever you get your audio.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, the rain is a gun. Fire, to
open the voice gate for August 26th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate podcast feed. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says Sponsors Podcast and you set up a one-time or recurring donation. But no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, KS Lowe. In case it's been like a real interesting kind of like abstract week where I don't feel like that I've been as connected to pro wrestling over the last 7 days than I have been in a long time. And it really kind of felt that way, like getting out of some other major shows and then having this palate cleanser of these Hakata shows that we're going to talk about on tonight's episode, for me to realize that it's just, I feel like the industry has gone weird, man.
Oh yeah. I mean, I talked about this, I think 3 episodes ago, where I'm now at a point where I've been routinely following Japanese wrestling for over a decade. I've been covering Dragon Gate for this website for a decade now. And I feel so disconnected from most of the wrestling world. I mean, it's very much something that I have to sit and think about sometimes in terms of the idea of adapt or die. And I go through the Principal Skinner meme of, you know, am I wrong or is it the children? Because there's there's just a lot of things happening right now that I don't necessarily love. And it's, you know, at a point in time where I'm pretty thankful that I'm into Dragon Gate as much as I am right now, because I think this is a really strong promotion and I really like the high points of AEW. And when I binge watch my CMLL, I quite enjoy that as well. But there's not a ton that I feel connected to from a work standpoint. And there's not a ton that I feel connected to from a culture standpoint. And plus, just with my life, I've got other interests that have skyrocketed over the last few months or just have taken a larger hold of my life. So yeah, the wrestling itself, I find to be in a very interesting position right now, where it does feel like we're at a tipping point where I would kind of love it if it reverted back to some things of yesteryear, or it could slide into a direction that I become really uninterested in.
Yeah, I guess for me, like when I sat down on Sunday for Forbidden Door, and even though it was just a noon start time for us out here, it kind of was like something where after I was done with the show, Case and I had our little therapy couch about what the hell was Kota Ibushi doing, and now why can't we see can't unsee Kota Ibushi? Seriously, folks, why do you put Kota Ibushi in a situation where he's going to do the Kota Ibushi thing, but it's going to be such a total disconnect for the remainder of the angle? I don't mean to go on that diatribe there, but it kind of brought me to this point where I kind of feel like we're at this time where, like, not only about like content, but also I really have noticed over like the last, like when I like take the second and take stock of these things, guys, I notice like, okay, when I think about like my habitual watching and things like that, and I compare that to the other things that I like pertain to my time and such like that, it just does not feel like there is like a weekly habitual, all right, everyone is watching this show at one time. There may be events. There are like Forbidden Door, G1 Climax, Dangerous Gate, things like that, that I feel like still have that kind of coming togetherness, for lack of better words, of it. But it feels like, in a lot of ways, as I like tab my way through like my YouTube of wrestling recommendations, and I end up with like the Shima anniversary show, it just feels like there's like no like draw to like form a habit or anything that's like doing something like on a week, maybe not even a weekly basis, but like having like something every 2 weeks that like everyone gravitates towards, at least for like the people that like I find myself in community with like watching shows. It just seems like we've completely lost that.
That's just a case of wrestling evolving slower than other mediums, because I think this is TV and music.
Love
and,
Island. Yeah, think about like stuff like Love Island every night for 6 weeks.
But Love Island's one of the few things that cut through. I was very interested by the White Lotus stuff earlier this year, because it's not a show that I watch, but it was the first event. It wasn't, because I think if that White Lotus season happens in 2019, we all have such a greater cultural awareness of it. You know, this is one of my fixations right now, is just trying to figure out if we'll ever have HBO Sunday night viewing in the way that we did, even with, you know, Thrones, which was still in a new media world, let alone something that goes back even further than that. I mean, in music, unless you're talking about one of the 10 biggest artists in the world right now, you're completely stonewalled from having a cultural conversation. Movies is an interesting one, because I up until 6 months ago, I did not care about new movies whatsoever. It's just, you know, I like
Fair.
it would be the type of thing that people would go, "What do you mean you've never seen this movie?" And I can't say, well, as a teenager, I was watching Stan Hansen in Puerto Rico, so I didn't watch any movies. But that's real answer to that question of like, why haven't I seen Goodfellas?
Okay, so I have like the perfect encapsulation of this. I have like a deep film history criticism background. We have known each other for coming up on a decade now, right? We've had a grand total of zero film conversations in our lives with each other.
And now I'm like a huge movie guy, because for my shoot job, we literally do a bit on the show that I produce where every Friday I watch an old movie and review it, you know? And so it's the most basic stuff. We're not digging into the Criterion Closet. It's
Rimbert Explains. Yeah.
It's the first time I watched Karate Kid. It's the first time I watched Jaws. I'm watching Goodfellas for the 35th anniversary here in a few weeks. I've never seen Goodfellas before. This week on the show, we're doing Wall Street, because we keep on talking about greedy corporations and things like that on the show.
Sure.
You know, Clueless was viewing. We're doing the most basic stuff possible. But along with that, partially just through watching an old movie every single week, and then also partially because I really like and respect Sean Fennessy, and I started listening to the Big Picture podcast, which is his podcast on current movies. All of a sudden, 6 months ago, I was like, I got to start going to the movie theater. Like, movies are awesome. What have I been doing my entire life? But you look at something like Sinners, which was a financial success, a critical success, everything that a corporation you know, caring about their bottom line is striving for. Forget the artistic sense. Forget the fact that it was a good movie, but they know that it was a success. And I don't think Sinners will have any long-term cultural impact. I don't think there's any quotes that will live beyond film Twitter, you know, but this is just the world that we're living in. And this is why I find AEW's history to be so interesting, because they kind of entirely exist in this world where it's a constant stream of data and a constant stream of news and a constant stream of new. And so nothing is penetrating. We're all existing with our own water cooler. That's the only way I can describe it, is we've long passed the idea of water cooler talk. It is like now every day we come into the office and we all have our own water cooler. And it's, you know, what do you mean you're not watching this on Tubi? Oh, well, I'm watching this on Hulu. Why? Well, it's like, it's, you know, and wrestling is no different now, where I think it's a little bit more isolated than two. I'm either watching all WWE, all AEW. I'm a New Japan Stardom person. You know, I'm a Dragon Gate person, but you know, you and I know it just because we've lived it as long as we have, but I don't think it's a reflection on the Dragon Gate product that there are perhaps less people than there were a decade ago going like, oh, there was a big Dreamgate match, let me check that out. It's more just people have the things that they like, and I'm no different. I'm not watching a fucking New Japan show unless people are raving about it. I like what I like, and I'm just going to watch that. And very rarely now are we forced to ever expand outside of that comfort zone, because there's always something new in the bubble that we like.
Yeah, no, and I think I find myself like more so if I'm like sitting at home and it's like, and Kings isn't watching. So we'll usually watch like, we have just finished going through Downton Abbey and Veep at the same time. So like we do stuff like that. Yeah, no, it holds up so well, by the way.
I watched it again last year all the way through, and it was spectacular. And I even really liked the last season, which I know some people didn't like, but I'm all about it.
Yeah, yeah. And like all throughout the show, I go like, how is Sam Richardson not like the number one like star in comedy right now?
But like that's a great example, is like Sam Richardson should be way more famous than he is. Heidi Gardner on SNL should be way more famous. That is such an interesting thing.
They just end up doing Apple TV shows that no one watches that they're great in, but just like, it's not like Shrinking became a big moment of their consciousness. And even though Heidi Gardner was great in it, like it just doesn't permeate because people are so siloed.
See, I didn't even know Heidi Gardner was in Shrinking because I refused to watch
that
show.
Not a major role.
Okay. I refused to watch that show because I feel like they stole that concept from Tim Baltz and his show Shrink, which is something that I think only you and maybe your brother will understand.
yes,
because yes. Shrink was on CISO. And if that sounds like gibberish to you, I will not explain it further.
You spoke
about CISO.
I know it makes sense to you.
It's the thousands of people listening that is completely lost on. But the SNL to Stardom pipeline is one of those things that I'm like, no one leaves that show anymore, because why would you? Because you're at least
if you're Bowen Yang, why would you?
Yeah, because there's not going to be something bigger that you can do besides it. Like, you're just in this very comfortable level of fame ecosystem where normally that would lead to an elevation somewhere, but there's not anything to go to now.
And if you're like someone like Bowen Yang, SNL is not the primary career that it once was, like even up to like the end of the Ferrell eras, where like the movies would be like, oh, so-and-so just did a movie, that's sick, like those kinds of things. Now you get situations like someone like Bowen Yang, who Las Culturistas is one of the biggest podcasts in the world. They get a show on Bravo doing like their awards thing, and he's able to do that at the exact same time as doing SNL, doing his movie roles, going to Wrestle Kingdom this last year. It's so much more different, I feel like, for the modern SNL figure. I mean, like Pete Davidson, like leaving like this was like one of like those last kind of people that I feel like was of that generation that you leave and you go do something bigger, or you attempt to like transcend it, because now the ecosystem is basically you do this and you supplement it with your other things. I feel like if you're looking at it at Saturday Night Live as a cast member.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the world of AD Bryant, but what has she done since leaving? I do not think the world of Kate McKinnon, but she was very popular. And what has she done since leaving? She's in some awful looking new movie that I will not be going to go see. But you know, it's just I because I work with people that are older than me, typically in their 40s, like I really try to hammer home the fact to them, hammer home the fact to them that, look, are we producing the highest end entertainment, whether it be TV, movie, music of all time? No, we're not. I think we're, as a culture, in a little bit of a creative rut. But there's still amazing things out there. It's just so much harder to find. I mean, I've seen five or six movies this year that I think are absolutely fantastic. I think Sorry Baby and Oh Hi and Sinners and Weapons, I think these films are incredible, but they don't have any cultural impact whatsoever. And I think if you asked your average American, they would go, oh, well, there's no new good movies. It's like, no, I'm going to big theaters to see these, and the theaters are packed, but just the way that things penetrate is so much different than it was even 6 years ago, let alone 10 years ago, let alone 15 years ago. And I think wrestling is just something that adapts a little bit slower. It evolves a little bit slower. And we are now at a point where we're just seeing all of the footage, and all of the footage we've had access to has finally caught up to us. And now I think wrestling consumption largely just feels like one big blob, because I could tell you every Dragon Gate Corkin main event from 2014 to probably 2018, and I could not tell you what headlined the August 2024 Cork and Prince. I would have no idea. I guess that might have been, no, that wasn't even King of Gate, because they did King of Gate in December last year, so I have no idea what it was.
Yeah, no, and like, just to kind of put a bow on this, White Lotus last year had its highest ratings, getting over 20 million combined views between streaming and HBO, and was not a cultural moment. That was, well, when you think about like other kind of things, that kind of puts in perspective where we are at as a culture.
I have a non-wrestling related talking point I would like to quickly mention as I share something that I am excited about that I do think has cut through the culture in some ways. Do we have time for a 5-minute diatribe on the world of music?
Let's do it.
Mike Spears, it is Oasis week in Chicago, and as we sit here recording this Dragon Gate podcast, it means that I am 2 days away from seeing Oasis at Soldier Field, and I could not be more excited. And it is actually the first of 5 concerts at Soldier Field in a row. It is Oasis on Thursday, My Chemical Romance on Friday, The Lumineers on Saturday, and then 2 System of a Down shows on Sunday and Monday. I would not go see System of a Down if they are in my backyard, so I am not attending those shows. I'm also not attending the Lumineers, even though I kind of like them, but I'll be at My Chem this weekend. Sold out Soldier Field, sold out in a second. But the Oasis show on Thursday, I am somebody that approaches most situations in life where I try to go in pretty neutral. I try not to be overly excited about things and just be pleasantly surprised if it turns out to be awesome. But boy, I could not be more excited for this Oasis show, let me tell you.
Yeah, this does kind of feel like the white guy from age 30, or I guess your age, up to like 50. Like, this is like the version of the Eras tour in a lot of ways. And I think it's like fascinating, because I found myself just absentmindedly going through, one of my favorite bands of all time is Led Zeppelin, and I found myself going through like their tour stuff and like how they toured and how like revolutionary it is to like that they had their own Boeing 720 that they completely outfitted so that they could just stay in major cities and then fly in. And then have you seen Song Remains the Same, Case?
No, I say this with all due respect. I try to avoid Led Zeppelin content as much as I possibly can, but I'm intrigued by this. So continue.
But like this whole idea of like touring, like event stuff, like it seems that these are like the one things that do kind of permeate through the pop culture, like going back to what we talked about a second ago, because whenever like we're talking about like these kinds of things, it's Oasis tour, it's Cowboy Carter tour, it's Eras tour, like those seem to be the things that actually still kind of remain to have cultural cachet.
And the problem is that the mid-size, and then especially the club level of live entertainment is just, it's so cooked right now. And it's gone through, post-pandemic, it's gone through ebbs and flows where it was amazing, and then it really crashed out, and then it kind of leveled out, and now I'm hearing from a lot of bands in my own life, and then I'm seeing even more stuff about, like, you know, there's such little money in the music industry. And for a long time, bands of a certain level would make their money on touring. And now the touring costs, between what the venue is taking and what the promoter is taking, and then the cost of gas and the cost to live on the road, it is all rising so much and the wages are not going up. But the high-end concert experience, which I think WWE has tapped into in a way that is underrated and underreported, where they've now, and I don't know what the business model is other than, you know, just the raping of a price tag, but they've tapped into
site fees too.
But for the consumer, yeah, I don't understand, you know, what zeitgeist they've hit on, but they have hit on the same type of person that wants to go to the Eras Tour is the same type of person that wants to go see the Royal Rumble in a football stadium or see WrestleMania in a football stadium. And I think that's very interesting. Obviously, I am normally dreading the idea of a concert in a football stadium. Not normally. I enjoy a good 1,200 capacity venue, sort of my sweet spot, but Oasis, man, I am fired up, because this is, you know, I'm never going to see the Smiths reunite, and I don't want to see the Smiths reunite. I'm going to go see Morrissey as a solo next month, and he'll be crabby, and the building will be half full, but I'll have a really good time. But, you know, Blur hates America. Pulp reunited last year, and I saw Pulp. The Stone Roses will never play with each other again. So it's like, on the Britpop pantheon, I would have been happy if it was just Liam on a solo tour, because I don't know. Noel was here every year, but I don't give a fuck about Noel. I would not go see a High Flying Bird show. But Liam hadn't played in Chicago since I moved here, which was 8 years ago. And so Oasis on Thursday night should be a phenomenal time. And I'm quite excited. And this is just a platform that I wanted to share that on. God bless no worries. Britpop. God bless Oasis. Shout out Liam Gallagher. You're the coolest person to ever live. And we've got two Dragon Gate shows to talk about, Mike.
I kind of feel like we should say God bless Dragon Gate, because I really love these two shows they had at a building that has been, I feel like, been trending warmer over time. But I feel like that as a case of a doubleheader case that they had in across Fukuoka on the 24th. This might have been, like, as a two-show block, I feel like some of their best stuff they've ever done in this building.
It is the definition. These two shows were the definition of easy watches. I don't think there was anything stellar. I really did like the main event on the evening show. I thought they closed out in a real strong way. But this was just, I watched the first show in one sitting, and I went, wow, that was really fast and really easy to consume. And then today I got up and I did my thing, and then I went home and I watched the second show, and I went, wow, that was also really easy to watch. So I like, you know, I'm going to repeat myself from last week just momentarily, but I continue to really like the direction of this company. A little surprised things don't feel hotter, because as a consumer, this is good stuff.
Yeah, at least for me, nothing was like match of the year level whatsoever. But like when I like look at this, I didn't have anything lower than 2.5 stars, and that was for a veterans match that kind of just did what it did. But I think they had like such a strong closing stretch of the afternoon show that it's stuff that is like borderline notebook stuff. But I felt like that the last three matches, starting with the four-way match and leading into Natural Vibes versus Ben and Hyo, and finishing with the D-Courage versus Kakuta and Minoli, I thought that they really ended that portion on such a strong note that I found myself going, like, it just like left enough of a smile on my face to like tick some of these matches over to notebook level. And for me, at least, this is a show that I'm filing in my notebook as come back to when we're doing the ulties, because I feel like I had as much fun in a lot of ways with this afternoon show from Fukuoka as I did the entire time with Forbidden Door.
I guess I'm gonna make a statement, and if you feel like it's untrue, please push back on it, because it kind of ties into what we were talking about at the start of this episode, where things for whatever reason just kind of become mush in my brain after consuming them, because there's so much to consume right now. But if you remove the fact that I boycott the two Kyoto shows before Dead or Alive every year, and I did not watch the Kobe Art Center show the day before Kobe World, because
These are Joe Gagné shows.
Yeah, these are Joe Gagné shows. God bless him. I do not watch them. I rely on Joe Gagné gifts of, oh, look at Bendito doing something cool, and then I move on with my life. But I have not watched those. I think I've seen everything else this company's done this year. If I miss something, it's a massive oversight on my end. I feel like the bar has been raised, or I guess the floor has been raised on these spot shows this year. There hasn't, and again, if I'm forgetting a stretch in March or April, please correct me, but it does feel like the working standard on these shows has increased even from last year. And I thought last year was a pretty strong year as well.
Absolutely. And I'd say like the proof in the pudding is this day in Fukuoka, because we know historically that whenever they would do this doubleheader in Fukuoka, by the way, 361 for afternoon, 491 for evening. I don't think I've seen, when I was watching the show, the evening show, they basically only had taped off the portion that they had in the stands for the hard cam. Felt like the most that I've seen in that building, at least for Dragon Gate lately. But like the thing about these two shows, these double headers, was that historically you would have something like more important to do on one show than the other, and you could very easily be able to tell. Like, and you know, the perfect embodiment of this was like Kai. Kai was someone who would always, like, if he had something going on in the evening show, you knew Kai was not getting out of second gear on the afternoon show. And I would say, like, universally, like, throughout this whole day, the two shows, like, everyone, there was no, like, taking it off. I mean, other than, like, Ultimo, but it's Ultimo, so, like, what do you get with him? And I think, like, that's where the raising of, like, the spot show standard really, like, comes to fruition, where you just have two very consistent, really enjoyable watches, and really like put your focus on what's going to be coming up in Cork and coming up next Thursday.
So they, for reference, they did a little bit more in the evening show than they did in June. They did a little bit less on the day show that they did in June. They are slightly under what Marigold did at the end of May, and up on both fronts from, when was this,
but Marigold only runs it once. They don't do a double header.
Okay. Let me see what, I'm just morbidly curious. And Noah did 505 in February, and again only the one show, but I think that's relevant, because I don't think Dragon Gate has crossed the 500 threshold for any individual show yet this year. They did do, and I had somebody send me this note, I'm glad they did, because I would have missed this. They did 400 in Kagoshima the day before this show, which for a 2025 house show is worth celebrating.
Yeah, and especially Kagoshima, a place that I feel like there's like maybe one person who's like from there, or someone from the company that was from around there. So that seemed pretty high. That seemed pretty high, but it felt a lot more full, at least to me, during that evening show. But I just think, like, overall, like when you like talk about it, and there is some stuff on this on these double headers that, you know, if you enjoy the guys, you'll enjoy the match, but it's not tough sledding. Well, when you see Ginky Horiguchi versus Don Fuji on the lineup, and you kind of know what that match is going to be, and everything else on it, I felt like we saw at least someone get the rocket pack reattached to them, and then the overall kind of situation between Heel Army and Shunmari was pushed throughout the shows, and we now move to a Cork and Hall where we're going to revisit the main event of the evening side, where the Triangle Gate match, I guess we can kind of start here. We're talking about the shows themselves, the matches themselves. The Triangle Gate match ended with a whole lot of shenanigans. Flamita had a tiger driver that he hit clean that brought out Minoli, and that basically, at that point, the match completely broke down. That you had a huge mass grip, and then Homari came in and cleaned out Kato's clock, and then pulled Flamita on top of Kato for Team Mexico to make the defense. Neither side was happy. Flamita has his sense of nobility and title matches case that have cropped up once again. There's going to be a rematch, and they were talking about stipulations. There's not one announced, but going out of the Sakata show, we had that title match, and after that, Ishin running down Homari, wanting another match. Homari wasn't going to face him, but Shun would, and Shun Skywalker came out, and we had another instance of Shun Mare versus Heel Army, and over after about 5 minutes, after an Oshla drawing everyone out, Shun Mare take out all the heel Army leaving Shun with Ishin, and he won with a, he's done the spinning rock bottom a lot, but not as a finishing move, but he did it kind of as like a pinning clutch this time, but it got the win there and moved the Shun Mare versus heel Army kind of story along. But Case, I thought that ending on like the these kinds of angles is what you kind of want coming out of this show going into a Tokyo, and I thought it was all really effective. Even if the match, the match itself I was like 3.5 on, but I thought that everything in it was really strong, and people like Kato and Bandito had another strong performance in this kind of format.
So let's talk about the angle, then let's talk about the match, because I have some stuff to say on the match. But
sure, yeah, let's do.
I had my Shun Skywalker crash out last week. I stand by everything I said. I still remain mildly concerned that he might have lost the plot somewhere. What I did like in all of this chaos and all of these shenanigans is that he worked his little impromptu match with Ishin as a pretty straightforward babyface. And he and Homare doing straightforward babyface things is really, really exciting to me. And I really like the work that they've done together. Less shades of gray, clearly aligned against what was Z-Bratz. I really liked all of that. And so my thoughts on this heel Army versus Shun Mare thing is that I'm very positive on it right now. And I think Homare running interference on behalf of Team Mexico, which by proxy is on behalf of Vibes, you know, there's something that should come of that. And I do really like that, because I think the next step is going to be, obviously, I thought they were going to do heel branding on this show. I would have really liked that, just because I like when something big happens outside of a Corkin, but they did not. They were, just Z-Bratz without bright yellow on their gear and without the Z-Bratz logo. But I would assume
except
that
for Kota Minoru, who still had Z-Bratz gear.
Did he? Because I didn't
his knee
recognize
pads were
the
Z-Bratz.
Okay, I didn't recognize the trunks that he was wearing, and I have nothing but good things to say about Kota Minoru on this podcast, which is perhaps a sign of the end of the world. We'll see. But I was taken aback watching the opener on the evening show and going like, oh my God, Coach Minoru, fuck it, where's this been? Like, who is this guy? He's awesome right now. But as for the main event, I think the next two hurdles are they're going to have to, you know, rebrand this heel unit. I imagine there's going to be some moving and shaking coming out of that. I think I would be a little bit disappointed if we get to, say, December and the heel unit is exactly the same as it is now, just with a different logo. I have been long advocating for an Ishin babyface push. I stand by that after everything that I saw on this show, which I want to talk about when we talk about the match itself. But rebranding this heel unit and then integrating Shun and Homare back into the unit landscape, those are the two hurdles this company is going to have to figure out. And if they do, I think we're in for a really memorable and really special main event angle, because I like that Shun and Homare are still mixing it up with these guys. It feels like they have unfinished business, and it should, and they should be going after one another. And I really liked all of this. I thought the layout of the main event from opening bell of the Triangle Gate match to closing bell of Shun Ishin, I thought was all brilliant.
Yeah, and I think about like the angle and this feud going forward. I like the fact that you have Shun Mare already still doing stuff with Heel Army, just because of the fact that I'm still of the belief that there should be it should not necessarily be easy for these two to be ingratiated back into the fold with the rest of like the units and forming teammates, given everything Shun Skywalker has done for the last few years. So I like the idea that his attention is still focused on those who have immediately wronged him for now. And it really works the way that these two guys, like usually when you go like, okay, or we've seen it before in the past, like Hulk versus Matt Blanky, 1 versus 4, Hulk is able to kind of get through all the scrubs, and maybe one of the heavies. But by the time he's getting towards the end, there's not enough there for it. But like, you have a twist on this that like Shun Mare, as long as like they are able to get in flow, like especially with like their babyface offense is incredible, and Fukuoka at least Shun's a babyface to them right now. So that's
a huge reaction when he came out. You know, it was it was everything. It was a great TV angle. It was a great American TV angle from start to finish. I thought they really, again, I was feeling unwell coming away from last week and just really worried about the state of Shun Skywalker and what that character is going to be. But man, I thought they stuck the landing on all of this.
And he's bringing it back to 2019 with an insane bodysuit.
And it looks like he's, now maybe it's just the bodysuit and the lack of padding in it, but do you feel like he's slimmed down a little bit?
I think maybe if it's not slimming down, you know, cutting maybe a little bit. It is noticeable though.
I encourage people, because I just saw some GIFs of this 2 weeks ago, because it was right before Dangerous Gate. There was somebody on Twitter was watching 2018, 2019 Skywalker stuff that they had never seen before. And I always encourage people that if you only know the most recent incarnation of Shun Skywalker, this dominant heel leader, it cannot be understated the in-ring transition that he's made. And I'm obviously a huge fan of what he had been doing from 2022 to now. But when you go and look at Skywalker from 2019 to the end of 2021, it's a completely different wrestler. I mean, he's coming from a different universe than the Z-Brat Shun Skywalker was. And what I liked about the Ishin match was it felt a little bit like 2019 Skywalker in the ring. And I am more than okay with that transition.
Yeah, and it's like slowly, like over the period at least of the last month, it kind of coming back to him. And we already saw like the teases of that with like the Ashla and the Kobe World lead up there. The Triangle Gate match itself, I really was kind of impressed with like how they laid it out, that kind of the first time or like there was a time that like you had the crowd brawl, then was focused on Monte, and then as soon as Monte gets advantage, then Flamita is the one dragging Kato into the crowd and lighting him up. And Flamita, like, he's been now back around consistently for 15 months, and every like once in a while go like, oh yeah, no, Flamita should have always been a part of this roster and never left to go to AAA and Lucha Underground. Like, that I thought Flamita was exceptional in this main event.
I have 3 points I want to make. I'm going to hit all three of them in succession, and then I'll throw it back to you, and you can add on any thoughts you want. Number one, I am extremely happy for Bendito, because you and I, rightfully so, were very hard on this guy. In going into Kobe World, I did not think that he was at the working level that he needed to be, even given his experience level and touring experience for this roster, and I was chalking this up as a failed experiment. And he had that disastrous Kobe World. I assumed he was going to go home then. Instead, he won the Triangle Gate Championships. Here we are now. Sadly, and I say this, you know, in a near apologetic sense, sadly, he's advertising that he's taking bookings in October, November, and December, which means that he's going to be leaving Japan, because I think Bendito has turned this around. And I now officially think that he can be added to Bucks and Swan and Ricochet and Monte and Chris Bosh and Human Tornado and Generico, he's one of those guys that has worked Dragon Gate and become a better wrestler as a result. I'm super impressed by that. Point number two, I told everybody, do not worry about Yoshiki Kato. There wasn't any room for him to do anything this year before right now. And every time in the last month and a half that he's been called upon to do something, I think he's stepped up to the plate, and I think he's been spectacular. He's not, I don't think, ever going to be the workhorse of the roster. I don't think he ever needs to be that. But I think he is more than serviceable in the position that he's been put in, and I thought Kato had a really great match. Number three, Flamita and Ishin have chemistry that is so good that it is unfair and it is sickening. I can't believe the Lucha standoff sequence they did at the start of this match with Ishin not going for comedy, but going move for move with every athletic thing that Flamita did leading to a standoff. I thought that was spectacular. Every time those two were in the ring with one another, I thought it was some of the best wrestling that I had seen in recent vintage. Ishin continues to blow me away. Flamita continues to blow me away. I think both of those guys are obviously two of the 50 best wrestlers in the world, and I hope that at the end of the year they're rewarded for that. And I really, really like this match. I would go 3¾ on it.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add for that. I thought that was all really strong stuff. I was just a slight bit lower than you on that. Where do you want to go from here on this? Should we just go work our way back from the and do the Hamare match, or do you want to go topic by topic from here?
Let's work our way back. I'm okay with that.
All right. So before this, Hamare was in a set of singles matches. Well, one was a four-way singles match across the day, but this time it was against Dragon Daya. And as much as Shun, I feel like, has just smoothly moved into being a babyface once again, Hamare still is a little bit of a prick. And after a while, it took Daya to do the vampire scissors into the reptilian Rana to get the win. And I felt like we got a real good sense of where Hamare is as a singles wrestler.
Which is something that I'm a huge fan of. I am really into Hamare right now.
It just was really smooth work. I was 3.5 on this, but like, it really kind of like, as a way as he's closing out this rookie year, having this kind of match against Dragon Daya, which this isn't like a pseudo title match. Like, this was like at about 9 or 10 minutes, but it just like, he is so smooth and so aware of what he is right now. And Daya was able to do a little bit of menacing with him that I thought came together all really well in this semi-main.
I think Daya has gotten really good at this type of match. And 3 or 4 years ago, I'm not sure that he was a singles wrestler of this caliber. And that's something that jumped out to me here. The other thing, and you mentioning this just made me think of this, but what is Hamare doing on the Korakuen show? Sorry, I don't have this off the top of my head. Let me look this up real quick, just because I'm curious now. So Korakuen Hall is on the 4th.
He's in a tag with Shun against Daya and Yoshioka and Not Hug.
Okay, I do really like that match. I'm going to be interested to see what he does on that show. I would think that they give him a big angle for his 1 year anniversary, but I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, unless he somehow is the one who gets the win on Dragon Kid, I don't know what you really do.
I don't know. I mean, I assume it ties more into the heel army, but I'm all for him pinning Dragon Kid, and then whatever. You know, I don't know if the October Korakuen, let me look at the schedule real quick. I don't know if the October Korakuen would be a Twin Gate match with D-Courage. I don't know what they do there, but it feels like you have a chance to do something big and memorable with him on that show.
Yeah, I just hope that like that Twin Gate match happens in Korakuen and not in Sendai.
Oh, shoot. I wonder if that's your Sendai main event.
It certainly could be one without burning something huge and can do the inevitable Rhea Fuda Brave Gate match under it and not feel too bad about it.
No, well, they're dead. Look, lock in Tanaka versus Fuda with all your money right now, because there's no way Kame's winning that match in Korakuen, which we'll get to in just a second. But yeah, doesn't that feels like your top two is a Brave Gate match. And then, I mean, Hamari and Shun versus Dai and Yoshioka is a big match, but it kind of depends on what they want to do at Sendai this year for Gate of Orchard. Do they want to take it seriously, or do they want to just get through it?
Yeah, no, like that's a good point of that there. But like, it's interesting how Daya got to be a little bit edgy in this match. And I feel like that's like one of the big changes we've seen about him, like previous to Best of the Super Juniors 2024, is now like he feels like he's at a position where Hamare was being a little indignant and Daya instead was like, all right, I'm going to mat wrestle you now for you doing that. I'm not standing for this. And I thought that was a nice little element in this match.
I agree. No, I really liked this. I liked Hamare pulling Daya basically out of the sky during an Asai moonsault attempt early, and then Daya worked his way back and landed an Asai moonsault later in the match. I thought that worked out great. I also think Hamare might have the best super kick since like 2013 Nick Jackson, and I am really all about that.
Yeah, he just has like a level of snap to it that it feels like that, and also with like his huge extension, I'm always a big fan of how he's able to because it feels like it's a trusted weapon for him. And yeah, he did kind of spam it a lot over the last in some of the rookie days, but I feel like it's kind of noticeable like how well polished it is at this point in time for him.
I think he's great. I've really come to enjoy his work. And I think him being a natural babyface, especially if Shun goes along with it and they match each other's energy, I think it's going to be something really fun to watch as we get throughout the back half of the year.
Yep. And you mentioned it before, but in the after the KZ Strong Machine J versus Yuki Yoshioka and Ryoya Tanaka tag match, Kamei came out and it challenged Tanaka for the Brave Gate. Kamei had two direct wins on the day. Tanaka accepted and then kind of roasted him, calling him a geek. So we have that coming up also on the cork and coming up on the fourth.
What do we think here, Mike? What's your read on the situation?
What I would do is, like, he loses this, and then we finally get him out of the Jackie Kamei overalls gimmick, and maybe heel turn him and have him be like a new element being added into the heel army. But that just kind of takes away from a very solid Love and Peace quintet that I'm hesitant to do anything with at this stage of time. But at least for him as like a distinct individual, this does kind of feel like the thing that, like, he goes and he loses and then he changes. Maybe he is the one that's up for maybe an excursion. I haven't heard anything, but that's just me pure prognosticating.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, that's interesting because he is 5 years into his career, and I wouldn't send him away, because it's not like let's say he spent 4 months in Europe, it's not like he's coming back and winning the Dreamgate belt. I feel like he would really cut his balls off if you sent him away. So I don't want to do that. I'm all for Kamei turning heel at some point, but I wouldn't do it right now because Jason Lee has a steady partner. And if I was going to turn him, I would turn him to team with Jason, but Min-O Lee is a thing, and they're, you know, it's post Twin Gate titles, I think, on fire. I really like their work on both of these shows. So it can't be them. And so now you're just putting him in a situation where Love and Peace over the course of the last few months will just lose another title match. And it's a title match that feels slightly unearned to begin with. So now you're really doubling down on, like, I don't think this guy necessarily should have been in this match to begin with. And then he's going to lose the match. And I'm sure they'll lose an 8-man on that show too. I guess let me look back at this Corkin card that I don't remember whatsoever. I keep on forgetting we have a Corkin card. What is the rest of Love and Peace doing on this show? Let's see. So he is in the semi-main against Tanaka, which I do like that it's post-intermission. I think that'll be good. And then, yeah, Hyo Bin and Rita versus Kakuta Minoru and Jason Lee. So you're just going to see Love and Peace lose two matches in a row. And then Junior is wrestling Kimura in the opener. And there's a non-zero chance Junior loses that match.
That was Case's Love and Peace existential crisis for this week.
Well, it is what it is. I would be building my company around these guys and not having them lose every single match. But here we are.
Here we are. Let's talk about this tag match. I thought that Tanaka just looked solid at this, and it felt like at like a time where D-Courage, I feel like, is hitting on cylinders, and they've like re-kind of gained that mantle. We haven't really like seen too much Yoshioka and Tanaka teaming, and I really enjoy that much. And the Machine Killer was hit in the match, and it felt like that's something that's always teased and never hit. However, Tanaka gets the wing with just one cross saber on KZ, doesn't the full one. And I just thought this was a good go-to intermission tag match.
It's funny the way that these things flip. And they flip so violently at times, because you and I, a few months ago, were writing off vibes and going, not sure we need them anymore. Maybe it's time to move on. And then Kobe World, it was like, natural vibes is here, baby. And what's the state of D-Courage? Maybe we don't need D-Courage. And now it's flipped again. I mean, Tanaka and Yoshioka, this might be the first time that we've seen them have a 2-on-2 tag match on TV, because Tanaka's debut in D-Courage was Yoshioka's last match for a year and a half. So I don't remember another time where they've teamed before. And I did like their chemistry. And I also, I don't know, I'll phrase it to you as a question. Is it notable that Tanaka pinned KZ with one cross saber and that was it? Or is that just sort of what we should be doing at this point in time?
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
I guess it's notable that it's like we've seen in his Bravegate matches, it's always been Joker Strizer and hope that it's landed clean after hitting cross savers. So I feel like there's a level of that to it. But I think really for me, I wrote that down just as like, okay, yeah, that's interesting. but the whole Nacho Libre.
I don't remember a time in the last decade that KZ has been cool, as cooled off as he is right now.
And I mean, Strong Machine J ate a spear in their tag match in the other show. So, I mean, both of them are getting kind of cooled off. I kind of feel like in some ways about Natural Vibes, though, now that we are almost approaching the window of which Shimizu could return, I'm wondering to see it. I'm waiting to make like my Natural Vibes proclamations until after December 1st.
That's fair. That's fair.
It just seems like now they're the not that like we're anywhere clear about his situation, but like it seems like that they've been keeping it around for a reason, and maybe his return kind of kicks off like the end of that reason or another revitalization of the unit.
I would agree with that.
The match before this, 8-man tag, Love and Peace, Hyo, Benkei, Kamei, and Rita versus Ultimo, Susumu, Hulk, and Kagetora. It was a jackie knife on Kage, and this was a lot of fun, and I think a lot of that was that there's not a whole lot of Ultimo getting involved with it, but you still really got to see how great Love and Peace is. I mean, Case, Love and Peace had a very good Hakata day.
Well, you know, very good wrestlers. If you did not watch this match, it's worth it to see the end with Kame and Kagetora. That was unreal. It was so good together.
Jackie was bumping his ass off in this match.
He was working like a guy who has a title match coming up, which I appreciate. I wish the title match was a little bit more earned, but he had his working boots on here.
Yeah, that is the kind of the thing that like Kame wins this match, and then in the four-way he wins because Ishin basically quits out on the match and decides to prepare for the Triangle Gate match. He's not like had any real interaction with Tanaka, and with how like let me look at the lineups, not just for Nara coming up this weekend, but for the other shows that we have announced. Okay, he has they're in Suraga the day after Nara, and it's a house show, but it is Yoshioka and Tanaka versus Benkei and Kamei. So they actually will have at least one face-to-face beforehand leading up to it. Like and even like on Doi show, they're not having Kamei in that match. It's Rita and Hyo versus Dragon Dai and Tanaka.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I really... I guess I shit on the match too much a minute ago, but I mean, Kame and Tanaka should be outstanding. It should be, especially the position that it's put in, it should be nothing less than fantastic. It's just the end result's going to bother me.
Do you think that they keep on having Tanaka have these title matches, not the Masuoka match, because that had like the production that we expect for Buyuden? Do we think that they keep on giving him like title matches in Cork, and so they can get one clip of him landing the Joker Strizer claim? Probably not, but those are the things Mike wonders.
No, I was wondering when I saw that this match was announced, because we're going under the assumption that he's going to have this match in Cork and then have the Fuda match in Sendai, and I started thinking, are they trying to speed run him flirting at some title defense record? And that was where my mind went to, but I also like your theory quite a bit.
I mean, like, he's a guy that I know that he is well under the Brave limit, but at this point, but I do feel like he can put on significant amount of weight when needed. So maybe it is that it's like, let's get as many of these Brave Gate matches in him as possible. I don't know, 11 defenses, even with how quick these have been coming for Tanaka so far, that pack run that he had, that took him over a year to do that. And I just don't know if that's possible. Like, even if you're doing basically a title match every 3 weeks, that like you're essentially going to be saying like, okay, after these two, then the Osaka doubleheader, of course, he's going to do a title match there. That's his home building. So then you have like three more title matches. Before we know it, he's at five going at the going into November. And at that point, maybe you do another Cork and defense for the year. He could be at six at the end of the year. And it does not really feel like to me that there's anyone in the wings who could be coming for him. So let's move this conversation now into 2026, Case, because now I'm on a roll and I just want to see this through fruition. You will have Fukuoka coming up. You will have the usual two shows in Tokyo, I imagine. So there's probably one or two title defenses there. And before you know it, like, oh, Bayside, there, three title defenses case. This guy could have nine title defenses by the end of January. Then you have Rey de Parejas. You're going to take a little bit of a break there. It might be at whatever, like, the big Golden Week show replacement for Dead or Alive is that we're looking at this guy breaking the defense record, because you've now talked me into considering this, and I think he could now, Case. I think, did anything I lay out there sound irrational? Like, there's enough guys coming up for him to face that you could fill out that fight card. He might be able to hit 11 defenses.
The only reason I even thought of it was I thought just the placement of the Kame match was really strange, and it stood out to me because we all assume that he's going to have the Fuda defense in Sendai. Now, look, maybe he doesn't have the Fuda defense in Sendai, and this becomes a moot point, and he loses the belt in November and whatever. But so he's had the UT match, the June match, and the Mochizuki match. So two title defenses. So if you go through the rest of the roster, let me just throw out Brave Gate guys. You got Himare, Junior, Rita, he's going to do Kame, and Hyo. Mm-hmm. Let's include Fuda. We're feeling really wild, God forbid Daiki Yanagiuchi win a match, you know, maybe Yanagiuchi could have his second Brave Gate match. You've got Kagetora, if he cuts a little bit of weight, Dragon Kid, if he feels like it, Daya, which would be really interesting. Nobody at this point in Zebrats, which I actually think that in itself is very interesting that they don't have anybody of Brave Gate weight right now, because Jason Lee looks like Heel Kame is a possibility, but again, and I don't know if now is the time for him. I don't know where he would fit into that. I'd have to see the branding, and then I'd have to see what they do with Kame. I love the idea in practice. I'm not sure I love the idea in execution right now. But Jason Lee would be your lightest guy, and he looks like he ate 2021 Jason Lee. As Alan Forel pointed out, looking more and more like Akitoshi Saito every day, which is very funny to me. Oh my God, yeah, his work has been stellar lately too. And then you've got Flamita and UT. So I lost track, but that's two, three. I'm going to count Kagetora, so 4-5 with Dragon Kid, 6-7 with Fuda and Yanagiuchi, 7-8-9. 10 with all of the Love and Peace guys but Ben, 11 with Himare, and that's not including rematches, that's not including maybe Genki or Punch or Maria or something like that. It's possible. The Brave Gate division's a little bit thicker than it was a few years ago. They've got a little bit more depth there now.
And I'd say out of the guys you've listed, the only three that I go in and not put Tanaka at this point as a favorite are Hyo, Dragon Daya, and maybe Dragon Kid. Like, it's like the slotting and booking really does feel like this is achievable.
And that's just mentioning one-off matches, but if you're Ryo Saito, think about how many times you can beat the guys in Love and Peace. You could just beat them month after month.
Week after week, baby.
It's the busiest schedule. It's the busiest schedule in Japan. You can just beat these guys every week.
I mean, who's to say that you're not doing the Lapis Hall Brave Gate Love and Peace Challenge? That could like eat up an extra defense each month.
I can't rule it out.
What we might rule out talking a whole lot about, though, Case, is Genki Horiguchi versus Don Fuji. Genki gets the win coming out of his big homecoming swing with the backslide from heaven. It was nice and quick. Mochizuki Jr. ate the rubber band attack. That's the only thing of note.
Yeah, I have nothing else to add.
We have a lot to talk about with this opener, as Kakuta and Minoli, the heel army, went up against Yamato, Dragon Kid, and who might be the Paradox assistant at this point, Kazuma Kimura, and in a super fun match, Kimura eats a last ride from Kota Minoru that murdered him to win this. This was the I had a moment where I was thinking about what kind of gut check matches exist in 2025. Mochizuki's kind of doing his own thing. Congrats on the spirit of Gambare for you, old man. And Fuji is clearly not that kind of figure that he was even as like 2 or 3 years ago. This match quickly disabused it because Kakuta and Minoli just they bent Kimura almost completely over in a Boston Crab, so his toes touched his head, Gaze.
And that was shortly after Kakuta did a choke giant swing on Kimura, and Kimura's not a small guy by any means.
Yeah, he looks like he's already gained weight since coming up to the roster. Like
this guy is a freight train, man. I liked this match on paper. I was looking forward to it, but having the spot early, and it was only a 6-minute match, it felt way longer because they did so much in it, which is good. That's what I want out of a match like this. But having the spot where Yamato is going to do some offense on Jason Lee, and Kimura shoves Yamato out of the way because he wants to get his hands on Jason Lee. We're talking about a guy who's had less than 10 matches in Yamato. And when you do stuff like that, you know, I think just even the bare minimum of positioning somebody like that is setting them up to succeed. But then we go back to the promo from the last Cork and Hall show where Kimura stepped up to Inoue and looked like he was ready. And Kimura looks like he's ready for this position. And I say this to every wrestling company in the world: New Japan, All Japan, Noah, DDT, AEW, Ring of Honor, if you want to count that there, whoever's relevant, we should all be treating our young wrestlers in the way that Dragon has treated Kimura in his first month. But we should be treating not just young wrestlers like that, we should be treating every wrestler like this. I wish Kimura would permeate throughout the wrestling industry because I love the way that he's being presented right now.
He jumps Lee to open up the match. He has no chill whatsoever. And then Kakuta murders him in the corner. Like, yeah, no, like this is, it's so funny that it's like in Dragon Gate where we've seen such like a variety of rookies over, especially in what we would call like the future era. But like, they haven't handled anyone as so old school as the way as they're handling Kimura. And it's great. It works so well. He plugs in so well being like the fall guy for Yamato and Dragon Kid, and it's just like everything, at least through like this first month, and you look ahead at what he's doing over like in the next few weeks. We at Cork, and he's going up against Mochizuki Jr. He has Misaki Mochizuki coming up this weekend in Nara. This is like, I know we have a reputation for getting really excited about Dragon Gate rookies, and I think it's well-founded, especially
Before you finish that thought, I'm going to cut you off just for a second. What I always say, nobody writes a better first chapter than Dragon Gate and their rookies. It's all about how they follow it up. It's what chapter two of their career looks like. That is where they sometimes miss the mark. But nobody does a chapter one better than Dragon Gate. You may continue.
Yeah, and this chapter one is such an old school feeling chapter that it feels so vibrant on a card like this. It actually kind of reminds me about the treating of Johnny Valletta and the way that they kind of handle him. Like, you have someone that's already an absolute specimen of what you would want to be a pro wrestler, especially someone coming into Dragon Gate. And it's just like, you see him, you see people like Kimura, and you just kind of, there are times where I just want to get a bad trainee. I thought we got that with Daiki, just so that like we have like a control sample. Like, Ryo Fuda was a great control sample for a long time. We need a new one at this point, because Kimura now, like, I want to throw him into battle with like everyone in the roster, and I want him to go like get into Shomo Kato's face. If there's ever like a New Japan thing, I don't know who a Noah Jr. is, but or a Noah rookie is, but like, that's what you should want from your young rookies in pro wrestling. And I think that it's taking something from like that has been lessons lost to time and replicating it in a modern fashion. I think it's incredible.
There's just objectively a presence there that I'm not sure we've seen. If you want to exclude TN Revolution from the conversation because of, you know, I mean, Kimura's career has now lasted as long as TN Revolution's Japanese career did, which is just a bizarre thought exercise that I go through a lot. But if you want to exclude him from the conversation, I don't feel like we've seen presence like this since Ben K debuted.
I feel like that, like, and maybe that is some of the intentionality of the of like putting him up against Ben K as his debut, kind of already conditioning ourselves to what to expect from him.
You know, there's a size thing there. He is a heavyweight, you know, a true Japanese heavyweight, and not everybody that comes through these doors is. And so there's that there. But when I think back, because this is when I would have been covering the company in real time, when I think about the things that I said about Ben in, say, Summer Adventure Tag League 2016 before I got the concussion, or the October 2016 Corken Hall, the last time that he wrestled as Futa Nakamura, the same things that I said about him are the same things that 1 month in his career, chapter one, not going to get too far ahead of myself, but it's the same things that I'm now saying about Kimura.
And it's just so fun to see this happen in real time.
Yeah, no, I can't with the match I'm looking forward to on Corken is most is his match. I can't wait for it. He has my complete and undivided attention. And also, Coach Menor's last ride was insane.
I thought he almost lost him for a moment.
I thought he was going to kill him. I couldn't believe it.
But then he threw him down so hard, and I was just like, well, it's a good thing you're a former judoka. You know what a kami is. You know how to fall right.
Oh, my God. It's fantastic. I went 3.5 on this match. I find that to
same
be
here.
Yeah, complete must-watch stuff. If you liked what Kimura did at Dangerous Gate, he picked up right where he left off.
Just a lot of fun, I thought, like this night session. In the afternoon, I think I liked a bit more than you, and it headlined by a D Courage versus Kakuta and Minoli trios that felt like, at least to me, like a very little bullshit big heel trio versus your big baby face, just like strong, smooth main event. Yoshioka wins with the high fly flow. I adored this match. I thought that like Yoshioka Kakuta's interactions, especially in the opening, were fascinating. I was 4 flat on this, and it kind of shows you like the testament of how good Kakuta is in the heel role and Minoli in this post Twin Gate world, that like they have their feud going on with Shunmare right now, but you just plug in D Courage, who have a legit qualm still with Kakuta, and it still feels like just as pressing as the Shunmare stuff, that at least throughout this match, I thought this was really fun, exceptional stuff, and a great kind of main event on a show that normally I think I would have been pretty happy walking away with just a 3.5-star main event. Instead, I felt like this excelled.
So I'm at 3.75, so not far behind you, just a little bit lower. And I think my hang up on the rating of it is I thought the match started a little bit slow. I wasn't sure they were going to get around to what ended up being a fantastic match. By the way, home run for Colson Montgomery, the pride of the White Sox future. Sorry to interrupt my own thought here, but this man is on a tear right now, and he is the most exciting player the White Sox have had in many years. So
it must be nice to have good baseball news come today.
Yes. Look, there's not a ton to love about the White Sox still, but they've got a few guys, and Colson Montgomery is one of those guys. I like him, and I like Kyle Teal, and I like their starting pitcher from last night quite a bit. So Montgomery's knocking the cover off the ball right now. It's incredible to see. The thing with Kakuta that makes him such an interesting heel is the three things I liked most in this match, in descending order, 3-1, were Kakuta's interactions with Yoshioka, and then Kakuta's interactions with Daya, and then Kakuta's interactions with Tanaka. And the fact that he was able to string all of those guys along to where whenever he was in the ring with one of them, I thought it was the most compelling thing happening. And for as much as I liked the work of Minoru and Jason Lee in this match, because I really, really liked their work, you just see Kakuta carrying himself on a different level right now. And that I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, I feel like that the D Courage guys play that natural foil in different kind of ways for Kakuta. Like, I thought the opening with like Yoshioka being able to like in the first exchange force Kakuta to the ropes and be like, "Ah, you're not going to overpower me, guy." And then Kakuta immediately going, "This is not worth it," and tagging out. I thought that was just like a maybe as like one of the last card holders of the Yuki Yoshioka fan club, I was like, all right, they still have this match down the road for these two. I'm ready for that when that happens. And like Dio, like having like a really long kind of stretch with both Kakuta and Jason, and he felt like it did not necessarily, like when you talk about how D Courage has changed, and I'd argue for a group that's been as static as D Courage, they have changed over the almost 4 years we've had them on the roster. But I think the thing that I think that has changed the most is now Daya's, like, and we talked about this, about Daya versus Hamare, like, he has just become and has, like, transcended his 3¾ star general status to such a level that the heat sections that he had with Kakuta and Jason, I thought, were just excellent. And it was just like, oh, this was like a difference from what you would see like in 2022 and into 2023, where it would is not necessarily like, yes, Daya would be the person taking the heat. That's what you do in a tag team that's set up this kind of way. But I think he's just kind of become more of a complete wrestler, that it became more impactful in this than I feel like maybe during the peak of the original D-Curge run.
He is starting to remind me a lot of TJP in the sense that when it comes to ranking the best wrestlers in the world, you know, especially in a year when AEW's had the great in-ring year they've had and CMLL's had the great in-ring year that they've had. And there's a, you know, around the world, and this is not even factoring in the Joshi talent, you know, just around the world, there's some people that, despite going back to our conversation at the beginning of the pod, there's some people that I think are doing things at a really high level. TJP and Daya are two guys where they don't always have the output that makes it readily apparent that, oh, this is one of the 50 best wrestlers in the world. But when Daya's in a setting like this and I watch him, I'm like, man, that guy's become a special pro wrestler, you know, much like TJP, where I just, he's always in the right spot at the right time. He's always doing something interesting. I just really like his work right now.
No, I'm totally with you with that. And the semi-main event of this show was Straw Machine J and KZ versus Benkei and Hio. And Case, I think I'm fully on to the point that you were making at Kobe World about Benkei and Hio. That,
oh my God, put the fucking twin gate belts on them. My good Lord.
If they got some time and some dedication, there is without a doubt that I think Benkei and Hio would be considered one of the top five tag teams in the world.
I find their treatment to be criminal. And look, I'm into this Yoshioka Daya thing. I thought they nailed that at Dangerous Gate. And I love that match. Best match of the show. I love the match. Oh, what are we doing? And they're not even in the three-way tag in Gorgon and Shun and Hamare and Dragon Kid and Doi. So they're not going to be factored in, at least for the next cycle of defenses. I don't know what we're doing. That is an open the Twin Gate team if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, no, this will, if it ends out this way, Case, I'm just putting them on like my underrated Dragon Gate, Dragon System tag team, Mount Rushmore, along with Araiwa at this point. Just from like what we've seen, they've only consistently been teaming for 3 or 4 months. But if you take their trios work as like a part of it, I don't know if there's a combination that has come together over like that time period and have been that much of a revelation of, wow, these guys have chemistry together. But also it is clear, and it's very clear now, that the two of them, like, probably dating back since they were like in the Nakamura Watanabe era, they probably were talking about, hey, wouldn't it be cool someday if we did this double team? Like, and you can kind of see that like come to play. And I think that gives like a level of excitement and enjoyment that you get as a viewer that sometimes doesn't always come across in pro wrestling. But it is clear that Benkei and Hio love working with each other. And this match, 12 minutes, again, 3¾ stars just on the other side of the notebook. And there could be the argument that this was the match of the night or the match of the show.
We saw it in Vegas. I mean, it jumped out to me at the
you
at
called
the game
it.
Changer
you called
show.
In Vegas. Yeah.
I was just, you know, and that was up to that point in the show. It wasn't a show that was lighting the world on fire, but Benkei and Hiowa, it was the game changer show. It wasn't even the main event of the Friday show that I love so much, but it was the game changer one where they came out of that three-way tag and I was like, oh, well, that's a team. I mean, there's something deeper there than just two guys in a tag match that have some cool moves. I mean, that is a pro wrestling tag team in the way that it should be. And when you consider the accolades that Benkei has amassed in his now 9-year career, and then you think about the popularity on a show-in, show-out basis of Hio, this is, to me, where the Twin Gate titles come into play. And if not the Twin Gate titles, then a very protected and very long Triangle Gate run, maybe ideally with Jackie Kame, but something. And I'm shocked that these guys are not currently the Open the Twin Gate champions.
The second that Benkei gets cheetah print gear we know that the Twain Gate should be on the horizon, because because I do feel like that's like the only thing that's possibly missing here. I guess I have a ponderous question for you. Is he already Benkei's best tag team partner?
No, the Shimizu run was incredible.
Yeah, but do you project this out, if this gets the time that we hope it gets, I think Kyo might be it.
Maybe, but not, I mean, not now. I mean, go back and look at some of those Big Ben matches.
Oh, Big Ben at Kobe World was one of the better matches of that era.
Yeah, like, the versus that. Kai and Yuti. You know, the Big Ben run was... Now, that also goes to my theory that I think Shimizu is one of the best tag team wrestlers of the 21st century, which is not a conversation that a lot of people are eager to have with me, but it's true. But no, the Big Ben stuff. I mean, who else... I would put Hyo over Shun, because I don't think Ben and Shun ever had a really great match.
No.
Who else am I forgetting?
Ben did not really team with Jason in Maximum. They pretty much siloed him over to Shimizu when he came in there.
I would have liked to have seen that, but no. So his Twin Gate runs, Big Ben. Okay, just those two. And then does he have a tag team? Nope, just Big Ben is listed as his tag team. So yeah, it's
why did I think he had another like Twin Gate?
I thought he did too. I thought he did too, but he did not. It's his titles are Triangle Gate with Shimizu and Doi, Twin Gate with Shimizu, Twin Gate with Shimizu, Dream Gate, Triangle Gate with Daya and Strong Machine J, which just for eclectic reasons is one of my favorite of all time. Triangle Gate with Minoru and Hulk, which I will completely forget because that just sounds fake. And then the Dreamgate run last year. So no, just the two. It's been 6 years since he's been Twin Gate champion.
We got to get our golden boy the belt again. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, if only he had the perfect tag team partner. Oh, wait, he already does. But we're just going to beat him again.
Except Love and Peace won both matches on their show here. talking about that.
But it's a Fukuoka doubleheader.
Yeah, and talking about how Kamei won this match, I don't think necessarily should be giving you even less confidence going into the Brave Gate shot for him. It was a four-way singles match, which felt kind of interesting and new when they announced it. Flamita versus Jackie Kamei versus Hamari versus Ishin. Kamei wins when Ishin basically just walks out of the match, grabs a box lid. Flamita comes off the ropes. He cracks him with it. And then Kamei rolls through with a Jackie knife to win here. Some interesting moments in this match. I thought that Ishin was really fun in this, and babyface Hamari in this. Well, when he was not necessarily going against Ishin or Kamei, when he was like Hamari versus Flamita, I was like, oh, the babyface thing is kind of taking. Whereas naturally Ishin would be have him as a babyface too. I guess really Kamei was the only one that didn't necessarily happen with. I thought the closing sequence was pretty strong, and then it just was like a gimmick kind of finish, because after that the heel army immediately built up their Triangle Gate match that happened later that night.
Love the stuff with Ishin and Hamari. I'm hoping we get more of those guys in the ring with one another here immediately, because I really like that.
No, I'm with you on that. We had my listing, I have Monte as like the son here, but I didn't have his partner as Bandito. 8-man tag, it was Don Fuji, Monte, and Bandito, along with Ginki Horiguchi versus Ultimo and Paradox, Yamato, DK, and BB Hulk. We got a variation of the Bible in this match, where it was a spinning heel kick from Ultimo that sent over, I think in that finish, it was Horiguchi for the Bible finish. The strong spirits, or sorry, Puresso spirits is calling it the Obel. Okay, so the Obel is the new move.
I have a wrestling philosophy question for you that came up in this match, and I'm hoping that you can answer it, and I'm hoping that if you can't, that Grant Akuma has decided to listen to this episode and make it this far in the podcast, because I feel like he might be able to answer this. But okay. something came up in this match that I've never understood, and I see it whenever Ultimo and Monte are in the same match against one another. This happens. I see this all the time in CMLL. I should preface with, I like the spot because I always think it looks cool, but there comes a time in a match when Ultimo will be on his back and he'll put his hands on the bottom rope And then Monte will run across the ring, charge at Ultimo full speed, and Ultimo will do sort of a seated monkey flip.
Right.
That sends
yeah.
Monte out of the ring. Visually, the spot looks incredible no matter who does it. Ultimo Guerrero does it, looks awesome. Whoever, you know, whoever in CML does it, looks great. Ultimo and Monte do it. Monte flies up to the ceiling every time. It blows me away. If you're Luis Monte, what are yeah. you going for? What is the purpose of you hitting the ropes in that spot?
Yeah, like that's a good question, because I feel like that whenever that kind of happens in Lucha, or when you like see it, it's like as the part of the sequence in a way. And it kind of is like the like last part before the, of course, the monkey flip plancha to the outside. But why does the person who takes the plancha go after the person on their back?
Because they're in a weird...
Yeah.
There's not, unless you're doing a baseball slide drop kick, which I feel like has become a lost move in wrestling, and I feel like more people need to bring that up. Like,
because that's what Monte should have been doing right there.
But they're never in a position to do... I've never seen somebody look like they're about to enter into a drop kick position and then just get monkey flipped over the ropes. And I'm just trying to figure out, because again, it's
yeah,
not
Doyle what, never goes in for like the Bakatare as a counter for it.
No.
Because Doyle would be the person, right?
I would count him as an example. Absolutely. So like, I'm trying to figure out just somebody give me an answer on what it is that they're going for, because I like the spot, but it really jumped out to me in this match where I was like, God, I just have no idea what Monte would have been going for there. And I want to be able to justify it in my head, and I can't, because I like the way that it looks, but it kind of makes no sense.
Right. Yeah. You need the aggressor's rationale. I don't have it. I'm kind of at the same point for you, that as soon as I saw Ultimo there for it, I'm going for one of those Joshi low seated drop kicks to the stomach. Right.
Yeah. Like, something.
Yeah. Like Starlight Kid should be the perfect counter artist for that move, because she does so many of those drop kicks. Like you can't try that on a Starlight Kid, but apparently Luis Monte will bite that bullet every time.
It's just, I don't even need a good answer. I just need an answer, because I like the spot so much. And especially, I mean, it's the best thing that Ultimo and Monte do with one another. So I'm all about it. I've got to get some sort of explanation.
Yeah. Anyone who has like this background here, like Cubs or anything, just, I would love to know this too. The match before this was they do this match like I feel like that I go, oh, Susumu Yokosuka versus Yasushi Kanda. That feels remarkable, but I know they've done this match like a whole lot of times, but it was Susumu Yokosuka versus Yasushi Kanda. Susumu Yokosuka gets the one with the Jumbo no Kachi Gatame, and then Susumu popped out of the ring, saw a kid who had one of his purple hats and gave him a deep bow. And that was pretty much all that happened in this one.
That was that. Moving on.
Yeah, the opener was Rita and Junior versus Kai and Kato. Junior getting after it with the heel army and a strong Kato performance, getting the win with the Caldera Luna to open up the day's festivities in Hakata.
This match put a smile on my face, because I started thinking about when Rita debuted, which was an unexpected debut. I forget who was injured, but he had to step in this building, and although he didn't wrestle Kai in his debut, it made me think of, he debuted in this building, and then 2 months later, right after Kai won the Dreamgate belt, they did Rita and Kai in a singles match in Kobe. But it put a smile on my face seeing the evolution of these two and where they've come since 2021.
Yeah, no, Kato looks really cool right now. It's interesting how like the heel army, like this was like our first kind of look at them as they do like the rebrand. Kai goes for the inside out Z-Bratz t-shirt, and you see the younger guys already kind of have that gear that does not have any Z-Bratz iconography on it. Like, that's something that I feel like I maybe should have, as someone who fixates on things, should have like clocked a long time ago, is, hey, no one's really putting ZB on their gear other than Kota Minora. Like, I thought that was kind of interesting for Hakata.
I think that's a good note.
Yep. Let's talk about this weekend's homecoming show for Naruki Doi, and then looking ahead to next Thursday's Korakuen before we get out of here, Case.
Let's do it.
All right. And Nara, so just to cut any confusion, this is not Naruki Doi's self-produce show. This is Dragon Gate's annual stop in NARA that they do for him on this. That self-produced show still coming on November 7th. Have not heard news yet on how to view that, if that'll be on the network or on some other service. This is just Doi's anniversary in NARA at the Centennial Anniversary Hall. Running through the card, we have Benkei and Mochizuki Jr. versus Ryu Fuda and Akihiro Sahara. Sorry, Kay, so I can tell you the finish. It's going to be that brutal looking pile driver that Fuda does on Mochizuki Jr. That, I'm sorry to break the news to you, but that's probably what's happening.
Look, it's you're not wrong.
I was questioning what would be a gut check in 2025, but there will always be one answer to that question. As Kazuma Kimura, we have loved you. You have quickly become one of our guys, and in a fashion that has been both surprising and also liberating. However, you have to come to the eternal answer of the question of who do you face in a gut check match if you're a Dragon Gate rookie, Case?
One Masaki Mochizuki.
And that will be happening as match two. I can't wait for that. Ultimo will be teaming with Yuki Yoshioka and Luis Monte versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Susumu Yokosuka.
I gotta say, it's not going to be a good match, but there is something morbidly appealing about that on paper.
Yeah, ask Yoshioka about how his time in Mexico went, Ultimo.
What can I tell you about COVID-19?
Yeah. There were some outside brawls that were happening. And, oh, my. Match four, this is a battle royal. It's billed as Naruki Doi's independent show competition bout, NARA battle royal. The winner, I guess, will be able to participate on Naruki Doi's show. And interestingly enough, Naruki Doi is in this match. He will be going up against Strong Machine J, Flamita, UT, Problem Dragon, Punch Managa, Hoholu, Bendito, Kai, and Yoshiki Kato. I guess if he wins here, then he is Dragon Gate Naruki Doi and not Senior Saito, or not Mr. Saito Naruki Doi on the show.
Aren't they doing a six-man with Doi and the Saitos against Zebrats on that show?
Right, yeah. So I guess this is the way to like write him into another match.
I'm all for that. That's fine with me.
Yeah. Unless this becomes like the next thing that Bandito has to pull that accepting bookings listing, because, buddy, if you win this battle royal, you're sticking around till November 7th at least.
You know, I'm a little burnt out on the battle royals and the Kobe Sambo bash royal, whatever they're called. But I will say, Doi being in this match and then being in the main event makes me think that they're going to do something with Doi and the artist formerly known as Zebrats in this match. So this has my attention too. I'm actually very intrigued to see what they do here.
Are you wish casting and Naruki Doi suddenly turns heel and becomes like the major domo to Madoka Kakuta?
No, I don't think Kakuta needs that. I think it's more Kai and Kato gunning after Doi and it tying into the main event somehow. But I have an open mind.
Yeah.
Yes, I have an open mind. If they want to turn Doi heel, they can do it. I'm not going to complain. I wouldn't recommend it, but more power to them.
Yeah, if Kakuta was not the clear heel leader and we were talking about Minoru Gun here, please turn Naruki Doi. But in this
think
case,
about,
I don't
think about that. And I'm going to pat myself on the neck for 1 second. When Minoru turned heel, I went, man, he is not strong enough to go 1A, 1B with Shun Skywalker. There needs to be somebody else in the fold. I mean, I was suggesting Ishin because I really do think if Ishin worked serious and wanted to be serious Ishin, I really do think he's at a level as a performer in every facet where I think he could go nose to nose with Shun Skywalker. But Kakuta comes into play, Minoru's firmly slotted as a tag team wrestler, and here we are now with a main event angle that I'm quite excited about.
No, I'm totally with you on that. Semi-main event, Dragon Daya and Yoshi and Ryoya Tanaka versus Hio and Rita. Yeah, why Kamei is not on this card and not in this match. Just circle this and expect to see Kamei around in that. And the Sururon DL Growth Prize six-man tag team match. I think I'm looking at this at the poster. Oh, no, that's the venue. I was going to say that it looked like for a second that it was like 100,000 yen prize. And I was about to say, that's what we're doing for this year? Okay. But I imagine it'll be some protein powder or something. I don't know what Sururon or DL Growth is. But it's Naruki Doi teaming with Shun Mare, Shun Skywalker and Hamare versus Madoka Kakuta, Kota Minora, and Ishin in the main event of Naruki Doi's Dragon Gate Homecoming show.
I'm fired up for this. I think this is such a cool match. I think this is going to be such a cool atmosphere. I love this card. I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, that will be an absolute blast of a show. It comes up on Saturday. We'll talk about it next week. We'll do the preview now for the Dragon Gate Corkin coming up on Thursday. Looking at the card, we've already talked about a lot of it, so I'm just going to run down it. Mochizuki Jr. versus Kazuma Kimura, KZ and UT, and Strong Machine J versus Don Fuji, Takashi, and Problem Dragon. Yamato, BB Hulk, and Susuma, Yokosuka, and Kagatora versus Mochizuki Dojo, Masaki Mochizuki, Ryo Fudo, Daki Yanagiuchi, and Akihiro Sahara. Three-way tag team match, probably one fall since it's non-title. Yuki Yoshioka and Dragon Daya versus Not Hug, Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi versus Shun Mari, Shun Skywalker, and Hamare. Match 5, Benkei, Hyo, and Rita versus Madoka Kakuta and Minoli. Match 6, Open the Brave Gate Championship. Ryoya Tanaka makes his third defense against Jackie Kamei. And then in the main event, match format to be decided, at least as of press time tonight. It is Team Mexico making a second defense against the team of Kai Ishin and Yoshiki Kato, as no one was happy with what happened in Hakata. So we'll run it back and Corkin on Thursday.
Love the back half of this card. All right. Yes, Thursday, right? What's the show?
Next Thursday, not this Thursday.
Man, I wish this show was on Tuesday. That would just work out so much better for the purposes of this show. All right, we'll figure that out. Man, I got to say, I love the back half of this card. I am into everything from Paradox versus Mochizuki Dojo on, and I think there's a potential for a few really special matches on this show.
No, I'm with you on this. It feels like a lot of things could be happening. I mean, like that three-way tag match, not only am I expecting to see possibly, okay, who Shun Mari maybe at Gate of Origin, but also, you know, Naruki Doi is going to do more for his independent produce show coming up. There's a lot of sticks in the fire here. Maybe something happens with Mochizuki Dojo. It just seems like that, at least creatively, Dragon Gate's in a real good position as they are entering kind of this part of the schedule where we knew that there's kind of you have to make the big shows out of your schedule, and at least Stormgate on September 4th feels like a bigger show.
Mike, I'm going to be honest. I'll end with this. This podcast put me in a great mood. I realized just how much I like those Fukuoka shows. I'm pumped for Nara. I'm pumped for Corkin. Yay wrestling. I'm going to go watch some. I am in a really good mood right now.
You know what? That's exactly the feeling I had coming out of watching the Hakata shows. I was like, I can't wait to get over and talk to Case about the shows. I did almost for like 5 minutes there, thought I was going to go throw up while we're talking the night session, just so you know. But I powered through it. I did DoorDash some Pepto-Dismal that I'm about to go take right now, because I've realized as I approach 40, Case, as much as I may like Popeyes may not like it.
Look, even as a younger, heavier man that I am, boy, can that come back to bite you real quick.
Hey, and I thought we'd maybe get a Popeyes chicken sponsorship. Doesn't seem like that way after my interactions with it today.
No, look, I've been there. I see you. I hear you.
I'm good now. I'm perfectly fine now, but there was like 5 minutes here where I was like, about to send you a DMC, Case. I need you to fill time for about 2 minutes. I'm going to go puke. All right, y'all. We'll be back with you next time. You can follow us at Open Voice Gate. Case is at _InYourCase. I'm at Fuji Heya. The Voices of Wrestling Discord is a great place to talk about pro wrestling. And if you feel like we're positive now, go to the Dragon Gate channel. You will find people always live posting like this. Like, we maybe have lost like the habitual, like overall, like wrestling cultural event, like on the weekly basis, everyone tweeting Monday Night Raw back in 2012. But people do still get together and talk about the wrestling they watch. And you'll see that in that Dragon Gate channel, as well as matches of the week and a lot more. And then there's also the Open the Voice Gate channel. That's where we post our schedules, show notes. Case has a pen post about every single historical show that we do. And whenever we do it those days, which it'll come probably maybe towards the end of September this month, just scheduling wise, we're going to get back to it. There's other stuff going on, but we always make sure to post our match listings there. But that's at the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Case, anything else before we're out of here?
No, really, I really like this one. So I don't know when exactly we're going to come to you. Oh no, we'll talk Tuesday, right? We'll do the NARA review on Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll do a NARA review on Tuesday.
Right, well, then I'm going to shut up. We'll talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week. If you know about the monkey flip lucha spot, get into contact with both of us.
Please.
We are very perplexed about this.
Open the voice gate channel on the Discord. Please put it there.
Please do. All right, guys. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.